Live from the In the Room studios located in the Net Carrier and Cloud, this is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the inaugural, the pilot, the beginning of WCW Retro, right here on the VOC Nation. Anybody want to make any comments on your memories of WCW? 855-VOC-RADIO, that's 855-VOC-RADIO, call in. I am the host, Dan the Man, the above-average comedian, Colachico. With me soon, hopefully, will be the maestro, former WCW star and current indie star. I actually believe he's on the line right now, so I'm going to introduce the Stro. Stro, how you doing this evening?
Great. How are you guys?
Right now, it's just me. I think Brady's bowing out for this edition, so it's just you and me, my friend.
Well,
so,
awesome.
Yeah, first of all, I was, as growing up, and for those who don't know, I was a huge WCW fan. I was a wrestling fan. I watched WWE. But I was through and through to the very end, through some great times, through some not-so-great things, was a WCW guy. And watching Nitro one night, and all of a sudden, come back from commercial, and there's a piano playing. The lights are down. And there's this guy that I've never seen before in my experience sitting down with a beautiful woman at his side playing the piano. And that is our co-host every week, Stro, the maestro. To my knowledge, you were working in WCW in the early 90s as a jobber, they would say. Is that true?
Well, I mean, it was just... Here and there, basically. Which I was in between promotions like Smoky Mountain Wrestling, USWA, and all that. And it was just like a fortnightly thing, with them, until later on in the latter 90s where I was under contract. Maestro Buchanan. And back then, I was when I first came to WCW, I was known as Robbie Eagle, and through my early days, Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
And later on,
after being overseas and everything, when I got signed, I was known for a while, Gorgeous George III, in honor of my granduncle, who was the original years ago. Him and my grandfather were actually good amateur boxing buddies back in the day before he broke into business. So, I do some friends of mine in the business, William Regal, Dusty Rhodes, who were telling me at the time, Larry, the original Moondog, that was kind of, telling me about my style and my mannerisms were favored the original Gorgeous George. And it's kind of ironic that, my legit relationship to the original. So,
wow.
Yeah, I was known as, I got signed on WCW originally. It was as Gorgeous George. And then, through the old Randy Savage, ballet thing with the name and everything.
Yeah.
It got kind of crazy, but I worked things out with Eric Bischoff at the time, and the guy who brought me in, which was really cool because I just got back from a tour to AAA with Jake Snake Roberts, and I was doing some stuff out in Texas when I got the call to get a tryout with WCW, and I couldn't ask for a better guy to try out with than Chavo Guerrero Jr., which mad respect for the Guerrero family. I mean, the whole family is like gold and rich for the wrestling tradition. And I mean, we had a fantastic match. I mean, you know, and afterwards, you know, you had, you know, Eddie and the Diamond Dallas Page, everybody, you know, putting the match over, and then you had all the agents coming to you, telling you like, well, you know, it was great. You could have done this. Maybe you've done a little bit of this or that. And you really didn't know who to believe, right? All these agents come at you. But it all goes back to my grandpa taught me a long time ago. It's like, I always know who the boss is, right? And Eric Bischoff walks in the door, looks at all of us, and, you know, looks and says that, you know, Chavo and I had a great match, and we could use a great talent like you. Welcome aboard. And no sooner he said that, all the agents changed their tone, you know. It was like, oh, great match, you know what I mean, and all that. So I knew right then if I had a problem, who to go to, right? And I walked out the door. There's Arn Anderson and all the boys, you know, ready to shake my hand and welcome me aboard the company. And it was really a great feeling, man. And dude, the Maestro thing came about. You know, Eric at the time, you know, they had the Mortis and the Wrath and the Glacier, the martial art characters coming out, personas. I hate the word characters. personas. I mean, you know, those of us back in the old school, you know, you know, we lived, you know, our personas, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's like it's more than just the character, it's a way of life, you know what I mean? It's our business, you know?
Right, exactly.
So, then you got the era of the musical characters, like the artist, woman known as Prince Iakea, and, you know, the Demon, and all that, Dale Torberg. So, thus the Maestro was born, which Maestro was a throwback to my old Gorgeous George third character, but with more of a musical twist, which was legit, by the way. And, you know, Jimmy Hart, bless his heart, you know, he helped me out with the sheet music and everything to play, perform, and it was an old rendition of just a wonderful Paul Orndorff ring thing, right? And and it was so, I mean, but it was funny because Jimmy and I were like the only two that really kind of more in depth on the music realm, right? So it was really cool. And interesting enough with that Maestro thing, Sting and I were the only two coming out of the rafters during that time.
Yes.
After the passing of a good friend of ours, Owen Hart.
Oh, yes.
And Owen, you know, I knew the Harts way back with one of the guys that broke me into, one of the legends, rather, that broke me into wrestling business, Cowboy Nelson Royal, who knew the old man Stu Hart really well, as he had helped him in his career. And I asked Brett permission to go do with that, because if he didn't give me the go light to do that, out of respect for him, I would have turned it down. But I mean, he, you know, he gave me the green light, and so I went ahead with it. So, but yeah, you know, my whole envisionment of the Maestro didn't really come out later on in my career, where I was it kind of came more to front of, you know, what I envisioned the Maestro to be. I, you know, which was more of a fan of the opera type persona, which, you know, the Maestro came off kind of arrogant, but it had like a dark side to him that when something would set him off, he would just go snap and go crazy, right?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Yeah.
And that didn't really come off.
No, go ahead, Nick. Keep going.
Oh, I'm sorry. It didn't really come off until later on in my feuds with Buff Bagwell and the Cat Ernest Miller and so forth.
It was,
and at one time they were going to put myself with Daphne and Crowbar. That's kind of like the psycho click, right? Which I was very much looking forward to. I mean, you know.
That was, listen, Daphne was one of my favorites. So that was, when I was watching you, it would always make me laugh, because it was like, I remember specifically that those incidences where you, all of a sudden you'd snap and you'd just start playing music in the air. And I would laugh. I was 14, 15 when you were on Nitro. So I was still this young kid who loved wrestling, and it would just crack me up. And I always thought, you know, it's just a little different because you don't have anybody out there that that has a persona like that. The classical music, the piano, and you answered about four of my questions already. If you could play, the music thing, all that stuff. I go back to a little thing you said earlier because, you know, all these stories come out after WCW closed, obviously, and saying, you know, nobody knew who was running the show and all this stuff. But you just said something very interesting. You knew who the boss was. So you were very clear at the very beginning. Bischoff was the end-all, be-all.
Bob, yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. And it was all, you know what, I'll give it to Eric. He had vision. But when it came to the point where he had a new boss every 2 weeks and it was just mass confusion. I mean, there are times that we didn't know what we were doing until like minutes before we got out there and did our thing. So, I mean, the border go up and down like countless times. I mean, I'm standing out there looking at Regal, look at Booker T, look at Sting, look at Sid Vicious. And they're all looking at each other like, okay, you know what I mean? But, you know, we made the most out of, you know, what was given to us. I mean, arguably, we had the best talent at the time from all over the world. I mean, you'd be hard up to have a mad match with anybody. I mean, it was like the best of the best. From like the veterans, the legends, to the guys, the great wrestlers from Japan, from Mexico, all over. I mean, it was truly a great time for the business.
You mentioned something very interesting that minutes before you wouldn't know what you were doing until you went out there. Was there ever a chance, was there ever a time that you and the guy you were wrestling that night would just make a decision on your own based on where the story wanted to go, or was there always finally a final say by somebody?
Well, I mean, there are times a lot of us were just had a match together and, you know, just for no apparent reason, you know, no story, no issue, just go out there and have a match. So, you know, we just made the best of every situation, you know. And you know, in the beginning, it was great. You know, I mean, there was, you know, a lot of things going on at the time. I mean, there was the NWO, right? I mean, the Goldberg push, and it was just, you know, Raven and Flock. I mean, there was a lot of great things going on. But, then when, you know, our bosses started to change, and, you know, and some were great, you know. I mean, Kevin Sullivan, I mean, I knew Kevin from way back, you know, Smoky Mountain and everything. And, he was more of a wrestling traditionalist, you know what I mean? You know, having great action with wrestling matches and so forth. So, I mean, it was cool why he had it, but it's just like, you know, it was just crazy. A lot of changes to the guard.
I was going to say, I recall that at the time you came in, it was like right at the time that all that stuff started happening, where 1 week it was like Mike Graham was running the show, or Kevin Sullivan, and then Russo and Ferrara came in. What was the feeling? I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. What was the feeling when Russo and Ferrara got signed? I mean, did it feel like, okay, this is a step in the right direction, or at that point was it just another captain steering the ship into the iceberg?
Well, you know, they had creativity, and they had a way of doing things, but it wasn't – I don't think it was meant – any of it was meant for long term. It was just pretty much throwing stuff against the wall and said what would stick, you know what I mean? And, you know, I mean, this is WCW was like it's a whole new breed of animal from up north. You know what I mean? It's more wrestling, you know, traditionally rather. And it's like, you know, it's a whole new breed of animal. And I don't think Vince Russo and Ferrara were, you know, quite ready for that aspect of it. I mean, they had creativity, don't get me wrong. You know, and they try to throw their ideas around and everything, but it just didn't really suit for the WCW way of doing things.
So, yeah, I mean, I recall once, it was like within a month after your TV debut, I think you were on Thunder in a hardcore match for Brian Knobbs, and I didn't even understand why. You know.
Well,
so
me neither. It was, we're both heel personas, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And And it was kind of, and next thing you know, I had Norman Smiley on ringside cheering for me, right? Like, okay. And then I think I wrestled him like either the week before or week after,
you know?
So, oh my God. It
was nuts. Listen, and you know what? I stuck through that the whole time. I was defiant in the neighborhood. WCW meant that much to me. I was you got to come over and watch Raw. I'm watching Nitro, and that's it. I stayed to the very end. To this day, my friends and people I've met through wrestling will ask me, well, how could you watch that? And sometimes I have to say, I don't really know. Going back to that first night, the characters coming out, you're getting ready to go on TV. What's going through your head, and what take us down to that moment when the camera came on, you were playing piano?
Oh, I mean, I'm just like any other performer. You know, I've had butterflies in my stomach, you know what I mean, which never goes away. I mean, you can be wrestling for 100 years or performing out for any arts or entertainment or anything that you go after in front of people, you'll still have butterflies, right? But I remember having, you know, that was my first experience coming out, propelling myself up from the platform, which I mentioned earlier that Sting and I were only two using the harnesses to come out of the rafters, you know what I mean? And I had a
harness
tucked in the back of me for safety precautions in case the platform would give way, right? I can propel myself up. And I remember putting the bass in the piano, right, because the crowd noise would drown the sound. I mean, back then, I mean, they would like pack the Nitros and, you know, Thunders. Great houses. It was tremendous. And I remember one time I couldn't get the harness off my back. It was like stuck to my trunks, right?
Oh boy.
And my tights, and I'm having to wrestle out to the ring, right? So I'm I go out to the ring and have my mat. And I remember every bump I took, every, you know, slam, whatever. I mean, that harness was like digging a small in my back.
Oh, God. That's
I just couldn't wait for that. You know, I'm grinning, man. I couldn't wait for this match to be over. You know, I'm thinking to myself, but, you know, as the, you know, and to quote Mick Foley, you know, the show must go on, you know what I mean? So.
Let me, I'm going to ask a question because, like I said, a lot of this, you know, I saw every week, but is it? Am I remembering this wrong? Were you not actually on a pay-per-view match?
Actually, I did a segment on WCW Super Brawl with Ernest the Cat Miller and James Brown.
Oh, yeah, that I remember. You did a segment. You know,
right.
You didn't. I'm going to ask about that in a second, but you actually didn't have a match on pay-per-view?
Ah, believe it or not. I mean, I was scheduled to be on the, I think it was the Uncensored, like the rematch with Ernest the Cat Miller.
Yeah.
Stemming off Super Brawl, right? But they pretty much scrapped our deal. You know, and it turned up then that we had like it on WCW Thunder for some reason. It was just mass great. I mean, that was pretty much towards the end, you know, not only my run but the company itself. But I mean when I left, when things started to get really bad, you know, I mean, I remember having, you know, even financial advisors and everything telling me, you know, the ship's sinking, you know what I mean? And it was just a lot of us, you know, Ric Flair and a lot of the guys, they kind of knew that things were going for a downward spiral at the time. And, So as soon as my contract was up, I mean, there really wasn't much use to resign at the time. And, you know, and I remember going back to some of the shows, and I mean, that's back when they were taping Nitros and Thunders on the same night. And they're working poor Lance Storm to death. You know?
Yeah. Yep.
And then they had the bright idea of making everybody a cruiserweight, including 6'5" monsters like Mike Awesome, you know, and which finds some of the boys had to tell him, hey, you're a cruiserweight, because he was starving himself and everything, trying to be a cruiserweight, and it was ridiculous.
I also I remember one time, and this was before the Super Bowl, which I'll get into in a second, because that's one of my funniest memories. I recall, I forget the venue, but it was on a Nitro that you had to fight MMA star and shoot fighter Tank Abbott. Well, you had to kind of fight. How did that come to be, and did you try to fight that?
Well, it was actually a segment. It was a segment that, you know, not only did we didn't understand, but I'm sure the audience didn't understand either. Because, I mean, You had us out there, and then you had Norman Smiley and Ming, you know, Haku and Cluster, you know. But it's kind of funny because, you know, here I am, you know, I'm a legit MMA guy from way back, you know, PWFI, you know, I trained with Dan Severn and Ken Shamrock, you know, which UWFI, Pedersen Pride Fighting, back when the MMA was mostly done in Japan at the time, right?
Oh, wow, yeah.
So, you know, and here I am with Tank Abbott, doing this thing with Tank Abbott, right? And first they wanted me, first, you know, he's, you know, give me the big knockout thing from behind, right?
Right.
You know, which I had envisioned, but, you know, it's like, because it didn't make much sense to, you know, come up right, straight up and, like, go in my face and knock me out, really. You know, I mean, come on. And I, you know, I don't care how tough the guy is. He's not Ronnie Garvin.
That's so nice.
And I'll put my money on Ronnie Garvin any day, let me tell you. But, I've wrestled Ronnie Garvin, I know. So
yeah, great.
I mean, if I was hoping they would actually have us actually have a wrestling, because, I mean, heck, I mean, I like, you know, Tank Abbott, you know, I wouldn't mind wrestling him at all. You know, and, you know, but, yeah, it was just a crazy segment with a bunch, you know, it was a cluster. But then again, there were a lot of crazy segments at the time, so. It was just one of the many.
That brings us to to a lot of other people. I guess your most memorable moment in WCW, which was the feud with the Cat, and it all came to a head, quote unquote, at Super Brawl 2000, when James Brown came out to the ring, and they had a dance off. Take us through. What was like working with – well, you know, I'll ask the first question. I liked the feud with you and the Cat. You guys seemed to have good chemistry, and it came off well on TV. What was – how did that come to be, and what was it like working with Ernest Miller?
Oh, man, I tell you, you know, we had some great matches. I mean, the house shows leading up to the whole angle with James Brown, I mean, it was really, really, really cool. I mean, our matches, you know, I do all the wrestling, he do all the karate, and, I mean, he was legit. I mean, he's a three-time karate champion. I mean, he kicks hard, you know. But,
yeah.
You know, but, I mean, we had some good matches. And I think what got us over was our entertainment factor. I mean, we're just, you know, we're both entertaining in our own little way, right? And to bring James Brown in at the time, you know, that was big. I mean, not even Vince did anything with James Brown at the time. And, I mean, when he came out there, I mean, the whole roof just blew off there in the Cow Palace. It was great.
He walked out that stage. I was like, that's really James Brown. I thought WCW was going to pull another one of those things they do that make no sense. I'm like, no, that's actually James Brown. Did he know what was going on? I mean, how the heck did you get... Was it as simple as, hey, do you want to do this? Yes, sure, I'll show up.
Well, I guess the office at the time, which, you know, Terry Taylor was very instrumental in putting it together. And, you know, they got a hold of James Brown to do his thing. And also, it was kind of cool because I'm a big, you know, I grew up a big fan of the 70s shows, right? And,
right.
You know, we had, if you recall, Mean Gene Dancing Machine did the imposter James Brown at first, right? I pulled the wig off. It was me and Gina Dance Machine, right?
Yeah,
and which
I remember
was,
that, yeah.
You know, I'm popping with this whole segment because, you know, I was a big fan of the Gong Show from back in the day, right? And,
okay.
And then, you know, when James Brown comes out and everybody goes crazy, you know, I do the Fred Sanford, you know, faint. And it passed out, which, you know, was kind of like my tribute to Sanford and Son, which, you know, I'm a huge Sanford and Son fan from way back. My grandma and I used to watch it all the time. I used to laugh my butt off every time. But, I mean, it was just the whole segment, you know. I mean, I think I was just having as much fun as everybody else. And it was an honor to meet Mr. James Brown. I mean, what a class act. And he actually knew my grand uncle back in the day, right?
Oh, wow.
And which was really cool because he inspired him and Cassius Clay, a.k.a. Muhammad Ali, you know, with their flamboyant style, you know. So it was really cool to meet somebody who kind of knew my grand uncle, too.
I'll tell you what, it was a highlight for me. When somebody says the Maestro, I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember this. Yeah, and then James Brown and the Cat. And then after that, there was nothing. What happened? Why did you not show up on TV any longer?
I think we ruffled some feathers, Ernest and I, with our feud. Because it was getting more attention than some of the other key players, I guess. Yeah. But, you know, it wasn't just, you know, it didn't happen to just us. It happened to a lot of us there at the time, you know, that, and some of us went on to WWE and got even bigger, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was just, you know, it was too. Too many people that wanted to be Chiefs and not enough Indians. That's basically what it was, and it was just it's a shame because, you know, if we all stuck together, I mean, WCW is still around today. I mean, it was just but while it lasted, you know, the run that I always cherish, and, you know, I got to wrestle and work with some great people and had some great people help me out. So, you know, always being indebted to it.
Well, that brings me to my next question. I mean, was there a lot of separation back in the locker room between the guys who wanted to work together and the guys who were too big for their own pants, or was it pretty much, were you all together, or how did that work?
Well, I mean, it was like the creme de la creme, the best of the best, you know, and
yeah,
but I think when it, you know, once again, it came down to was the money issue. There were some greedy people on the money department, and there was like mismanagement of the office and everything, and nobody really wanted to pull together. Which, you know, I think if we did more pulling together, you know, I mean, it wasn't, well, you know, like WWE has this, you know, committee, right? And they get an idea and they pitch an idea, and everybody puts their input in this idea. Vince McMahon is pretty much the guy that says yay or nay on the idea. But if he says yes on an idea, 9 times out of 10, the idea is going to be a success because everybody's had their input into it, right? We didn't have that in WCW. And I think from the boys and the girls to the office, to the main guy who was in charge at the time, if we all had had come together and went that route. And because, I mean, look, like the WWE, I mean, from the first match on to the main event is, you know, I mean, everything has a story, everything has an issue, and everything is pretty much, there's always a long-term deal involved, or, you know, there used to be, right? You know, if we had had that, more cohesiveness, I mean, the WCW would still be here today, you know, doing a deal with WWE, you know what I mean? Who knows?
Yeah. I remember that Nitro, and then I have a question about a comment and then a question. The Nitro where it was announced, at least on the TV side, I don't know how much of it at that point was also backstage. They actually ran the show. But when Bischoff, it was in Colorado, I believe, when Bischoff and Russo were going to work together and run the show, I remember seeing you at ringside, and then that was it. You were off TV a long time, and then you were on that show just standing at the beginning, and then you were gone. Did you know at the time, that day, did you know that was pretty much going to be your last appearance on that in that company?
Oh, after that night I knew.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
That was my last Nitro. Oh my God, that was the night Stacy Kubo's head almost caught on fire with the pyro, and yeah. You know, we're standing out there looking thumbs up, thumbs twiddling around like what's going on here, and you know we were promised like oh things are going to change for the better and you know and promised this and that and it was just. As we well know now, it didn't change; it just got worse. Yeah. So, but I mean, you know, it's really sad things went the way they did, you know, and because you know, everybody worked their butts off. I mean, not only the wrestlers and the valets and the managers, but you know, the crew. I mean, the crew, the film crew, the ring crew, I mean, everybody, you know, we gave forth a lot of effort to try to make it work. And, you know, I really would like to thank those guys, you know, if they're listening now or listen to this show down the road or whatever. I mean, I want to thank everybody, you know, for the, not only gave me, but for the whole deal. I mean, those guys don't get enough credit for all they do. They really worked hard to make it happen.
Was there any, and this is just a post-WCW question, if you will, was there any doubt in your mind after leaving WCW? Did you have any, you know, second thoughts in continuing wrestling, or did you just go straight forward after that?
Well, you know, it's just like anything else, you know, you move on to bigger and better things, and, you know, I mean, yeah, I moved on, and wrestling, still wrestling now to this day, you know, different places, you know, U.S.,
yeah,
et cetera, you know what I mean? So, I mean, you know, life goes on, and, you know, I'm happy that WWE's doing really well. I'm really happy to relive some of the old WCW memories through WWE Network, and I'm really happy my friend Triple H, who's really doing a great job, you know, opening up the Performance Center down in Florida. And which I got one of the guys I trained down at NXT right now, Scott Dawson, that's doing really well down there as well. And my friends William Regal and Ricky Steamboat, Dusty Rhodes, a lot of those guys helping them out with that. And so, I mean, I just want to see professional wrestling flourish, you know, in bottom line.
Yeah, bottom line, yeah, gotcha. Well, it was... I never thought I'd ever get to talk to a past WCW star, so I had questions, and you answered them fantastically. We're not done yet. We're going to take a break, play a commercial, and then when we come back, we're both going to be fans of wrestling and talk about random WCW memories, and then at the end of the show, we will talk about what the future of the show is and what else we're going to talk about. We'll be right back.
This is D'Lo Brown, and right here, right now, you better recognize that I am down with the VOC Nation. Recognize that.
Hey guys, Brady Hicks here, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributing writer and the host of In the Room, thebradyhicks.com, and for the first time ever, vocnation.com. So happy to be part of the family. Join us each and every Tuesday night, 9, 8 central, vocnation.com, thebradyhicks.com, myself, DJ, Derek McDonald, Ray Bogus, Anthony Sarlo, Kathy Fitz, breaking down all that's going on in wrestling today, and so much more.
Okay, Philadelphia parents, listen up. Do you have a child in the house that's just about to learn how to drive? Well, you got to do this. You got to head over to DuncanSchoolOfDriving.com. Best of Bucks County 2013. Keep that insurance down. Keep them accident-free. 215-639-1990. They're endorsed by the Pennsylvania Police Officers Association, DuncanSchoolOfDriving.com.
Business owners, prepare to take charge. Get the latest trends in business and technology every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Eastern, presented by NetCarrier. Tweet your business questions in advance at NetCarrier using the hashtag TakeChargeTuesday or call live toll-free at 1-855-VOC-Radio.
Hey, I'm the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, telling you fans worldwide to visit VOCNation.com. VOC Nation gives you top-notch interviews, insightful blogs, and, of course, the VOC Wrestling Nation radio program. The VOC Wrestling Nation radio program is live every Wednesday with the hottest guests, the latest news, and lots of fun from the greatest team in wrestling media headed by the voice of choice. Hey, take it from me, the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. VOCNation.com is the place to go, baby.
Hola, hola, hola. I am Shelly Funtime Martinez.
And I am Dazzling Danielle.
And together we are
the Martinez Girls.
Tune in on VOC Nation at 7 p.m. Eastern
every Saturday. And until then, Danielle, I and you are Audi 5000. Adios, toodles.
The godless voice of Crab Nation.
None of these assholes would have the balls to say any of this to anyone live.
I get hard as one of them stones. I'm going to hurl at a homosexual.
He's got 6 ounces of weed,
and he's saving his roaches?
Bangable and diabetic.
Park the car keys.
This is Stevie Wonder.
Free speech zone should just be the air, motherfucker.
Catch the crabs on Crab Nation Live weekdays.
Noon to 2 p.m. Pacific, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the VOC Nation.
Entertainment with an attitude.
Fear is just one enemy.
This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. As Tony would say, to the greatest night ever in WCW history. No, I'm not going to do that. It's WCW Retro with Dan the Man Colachico and former WCW and current indie wrestling star, The Stro. And right now, we're both fans. And Stro, your fondest, other than yourselves, your fondest WCW memories from just being a fan of wrestling?
Oh, man. There's quite a few, actually. It's like way back WCW or like towards latter WCW? I mean.
Whatever pops in your head, go for it. We are talking about WCW as a whole right now. NWA, whatever you got.
Oh my goodness, man! So many. I tell you, the whole Sting thing was really big at the time. I remember when Sting took some time off and came back as the Crow Sting, right? Crow looking thing. But I mean that was big. I mean he would make appearances and he wouldn't say a word and people would be on their feet going crazy. I mean, and it just, I remember that would just captivate so many audiences all over the world, you know?
I tell you, going back to something I said earlier, and you mentioned Sting, and I think the reason why I stuck with WCW is growing up, everybody has their that wrestler. Sting was my favorite wrestler, even past where many of my friends would agree is past his prime. He was still the reason I was watching that show, even from the Surfer to the Crow gimmick. That was the reason. I'll tell you what. I'll ask it like this. What is your personal earliest WCW or NWA memory?
Personally or like even before me? one of my first matches was with Sting, actually.
Oh, really?
WCW.
Okay.
And this was back when he had the blonde hair and everything. And then, so it was this guy. You know, I was very fortunate to wrestle with Sting and Mick Foley, aka Cactus Jack, Max Payne, Tugo Scorpio, a lot of the top stars at the time. You know, I first started wrestling for WCW, so I mean, and then later on, being more on a regular basis with these guys was just, you know, it was big for me.
I tell you, my first personal WCW memory was Halloween Havoc '89 at the Philadelphia Civic Center. 6 years old. I just turned six that year, and we were way up there at the top of that hole they call the Civic Center. I just remember this building being this very empty, very echoey, very dank building they used to play basketball and hockey in, and I just have this random memory of this vivid memory, rather, of just that was kind of the moment where I became the fan I am today, that I followed everything that was wrestling. And for a while there, I didn't when I was really young, I didn't even watch WWF. It was maybe 92, 93 when I was getting a little bit older that I was trying to watch everything that was wrestling. I was like, WWF. I can remember specifically sitting in front of my television. This is going to seem weird to some people. This is 6 or 7 years old around the same time. Sitting in front of the television and seeing the Ultimate, a commercial for the WWF. I think it was the ring with the action figures. And I'm going, there's a different company? There's a whole other thing going on? And that just brought my love of wrestling up even more. And that's the earliest memory, is being there at that hollowed out building in somewhere in the middle of Philadelphia. I think it's a hospital now. It's part of a children's hospital. The old Civic Center, seeing what the heck was it? It was the Thunderdome cage match.
Mm-hmm.
It was Sting and Flair against Muda and Funk.
Oh,
and,
classic.
And yeah, and really knowing what to expect from a match like that. That was the first time you had a cage, in my memory, surrounding the whole ring, where you can actually get in there and do things. And Sting was it for me. And to see Ric Flair for the first time, and I believe I'd only had the pleasure, as much as I liked Flair, I saw him 4 or 5 times because of how weird the schedule. Philadelphia, like, they would come back and Flair wouldn't be on the show. And then I'd see him at a house show in December, late 98. I saw him at a house show. But when they came back early on Nitro, earlier in the year, he wasn't there. the many problems Flair had.
Yeah, had 4 guys that were, like, top-notch. I mean, I call him Uncle Terry because I told him I officially adopted him as my uncle. Terry is awesome. And, you had wrestling with and watching the great Muda. I mean, what a phenomenal athlete he is. And, I mean, a legend in Japan. And the matches he had with Sting, you know, WCW, were just tremendous. You know, from, you know, here in the States and Japan. And I mean, Sting, at the time, I mean, he had great athletic ability, great, I mean, off-the-chart charisma. And, you know, even, teaming with Flair and then the matches against each other were just tremendous.
I really thought that, he was the flag that carried the WCW. That was it. He was the franchise, as everybody says, he was the franchise of that company. And I always, not to get off the WCW thing, because there's so many roads I could take with these discussions, I always regretted as a fan that he just, and still doesn't look like he's going to sign, that he never signed with WWE. Because I think he would have been bigger than a lot of the guys. He would have been right out there with a lot of the guys that were considered the best in that company. That's just how I feel. Do you think during the wars, and we're not going to get into that specifically, that's another episode altogether as I try to format the show, but do you think having all the TV, do you think Bischoff trying to do Thunder and Nitro and Saturday Night and Worldwide, do you think maybe that hurt the company a little bit, or could you just get enough?
Well, I mean, the programming was, great. I mean, you can ask for better programming and all what they were trying to do, and like for the Nitros, you had like the best cruiserweights from all over the world, wrestle and compete in like the first hour or two, and then you would have the bigger storylines with the legends and the veterans and the top stars of the company, like towards the end. So, I mean, it was a healthy blend, a healthy mix, and I really don't think that was as much the downfall as much as the lack of direction, and cohesiveness, what I mean? And, you're talking about Sting. I mean, especially, with the rivalry with him and the NWO, I mean, that was big. Cause, I mean, when Hogan, when he turned and side with Hall and Nash, when they came over, I mean, that was big, man. I mean, and then that led to the rivalry with them and Sting. I mean, that was just, it was awesome.
I'll throw another name out there, not on the wrestling side, but the certainly a talent, probably one of the greatest ever in the wrestling business as far as psychology and his mind, when they brought in Bobby the Brain Heenan. A lot of people say that maybe he wasn't in his prime, but when you had him working with Schiavone and all these other guys on TV, he could talk and act circles around these guys. Bobby Heenan, I lived through Bobby Heenan's early career through, you know, tapes, DVDs, the WWE stuff, WWF stuff, on tapes, you know, DVDs and stuff that I didn't live through. But I grew up knowing Bobby Heenan through WCW, and Nitro and any show he was on was always 10 times better with Bobby Heenan on commentary or on TV. How did you feel about Bobby Heenan?
Actually, Bobby Heenan and Sherry Martel were my two original picks to manage me when I first started doing the full time deal with WCW.
Oh wow!
And, but you know, both of them I had tremendous respect for, and I was friends with both. And Bobby almost had the gig, but you know, he was doing commentary at the time with Tony, as you mentioned. And Sherry almost had the deal too, but they went ahead and went with Alicia Webb. Symphony, we all know now, formerly Ryan Shamrock or WWE, which was, you know, she was really great to work with, a very nice lady to this day. Actually, I saw her last year at a WrestleCade event in Winston-Salem, the first time I've seen her since you know, I left WCW, and you know, she's doing really good and everything. So it was, I tell you, you know, but Bobby, what a master. I mean, I remember watching him and Gorilla Monsoon just light up primetime wrestling every week, you know. And he was a tremendous wrestler before he became a manager, too. And say back in the day, a lot of your like great managers, most of them for that matter, were actually great wrestlers at one time. You know, Bobby Heenan, Fred Blassie, J.J. Dillon, Captain Lou Albano.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So. Yeah, Bobby was so quick-witted. I say he so could have been a comedian. he was so good.
You know what? I think he did just fine. I'll tell you what. When that DVD, that WWF Bobby Heenan DVD came out, I think I watched it with my fiance like four times that day. Even the WCW stuff. Again, there were so many issues which we're not going to harp on any longer until we have like the death of WCW episode, but. When you had Bobby Heenan throwing out one-liners that, you know, 10, 15 years, 20 years later were still better than anybody else on the show. And
I recall a Hacksaw Jim Duggan match where he's laughing at Tony because he mentioned that Hacksaw went to college. And he laughed for the whole match. And then after the match he said, "That's it, Tony, I need to go get a beer."
I found that on YouTube a couple months ago, and I guess it's something I forgot about because I watched it and I was dying laughing. Just Bobby was one of the. I remember they cut from they came back to Nitro from a commercial, and the Nitro girls were dancing on the stage, and Tony's going through the ticket sales spiel that he has to go through. And right in the middle of him giving out a phone number or a location where a Ticketmaster outlet was, the camera zooms in on the Nitro girls, and Bobby Heenan just goes, "Wow! Oh, sorry," and just interrupted the whole flow and killed everything. And I remember just the falling over because it was so damn funny.
I remember one match I had, and after the match, I did my usual deal, I'd celebrate and you know hold Symphony up in the air, and you know we'd celebrate rather. Thank God I did not listen to the commentary because I listened. I watched the playback later on. And Bobby, as soon as I picked her up and celebrated, but you can hear Bobby Heenan saying, "Backdropper, maestro, over the top rope." I would have lost it. Seriously, would have lost if I heard him. Bobby's great. And try having like dinner with him and me and Gene Oakland. Oh, those guys are a riot.
It would be the best diet I ever went on because I don't think I could eat a damn thing sitting with them at a dinner table. Not only would I die from laughing, but just listening to their stories, I just
and sit there.
One kid went up to him one time and wanted to shake Bobby Heenan's hand, right? We're having dinner, and Bobby's like, I'm sorry, kid. I don't shake hands with people I don't know, right? And as the kid's walking off, Gene looks at him and says, hey, my watch. Like the kid tried to steal his watch.
Old things, you know, old habits die hard. I mean, that guy could turn it on towards the very end of his wrestling career. One of the things, even as a young kid who didn't know a lot about, I didn't know what I know now about wrestling, you know what I mean, kayfabe and what's behind the scenes, what's on the show, and what really happens. When they replaced Bobby Heenan with Mark Madden, even I was angry. I was so mad that they put Mark Madden. I didn't have a problem with Mark Madden until later, but that's another story. I didn't understand even at that point why they replaced one of the greatest mouths ever in the business with Mark Madden. Then they throw him on Thunder, and then they took him off Thunder, replaced him with Stevie Ray, and then they put Bobby on WCW Worldwide, which was syndicated at the time, and put him on TV with TNA, and they basically rehashed primetime wrestling. Now, it was still funny because it was Bobby, but looking back, it's like, what a waste of an amazing talent. And you hear some of the interviews he did after the company died, and by the end, he just wasn't happy anymore. He was staying because they were paying him so much. And I feel that a lot of guys were just hanging around, really, for the money. But Bobby Heenan, I never understood why they did that to Bobby. I heard rumors that, you know, they were going for a younger look. I'm like, yeah, Mark Madden, that's a younger look. Whoa.
I don't, you know what, I don't think they even knew what they were doing. it was just crazy. And you're right, a lot of us did stick around. I mean, the money was great. I mean, no complaints. I mean, gosh, it was crazy. Some guys were getting paid like an unreal substantial amount of money, whether they did anything or not. It was nuts.
Well, I won't comment. Never mind. Get me in trouble.
Yeah. It was crazy, man.
I will say this: throughout all that happened, you can find. I'm waiting for the day that the network puts the old Nitro. Because you can go online, and not me, I know a friend of mine, wink, wink, that buys the DVDs online from other people, and you go back and watch all, the episodes, and some of it is kind of eh, but there's a lot of good memories in WCW, and I'm a WCW connoisseur. I can't talk tonight, my job.
I know the feeling.
I have a feel. There's a lot we're going to talk about in the weeks to come. We're going to try. I would like to try to do it in some sort of order. For instance, next week I think we should just talk about the Crockett Productions, the Crockett years of NWA leading up to the sale of WCW. I had to relive a lot of that stuff. In the last few years because of on demand, but a lot of that stuff through old videos and articles and books to read, but there's a lot we could talk about. So next week is basically going to be NWA and the early days of WCW and the Crockett years. And we go from there.
Sounds great.
Anything you have something you want to bring up on one episode, we'll talk about it. But we're going to pretty much try to keep it, quote-unquote, in some sort of order and a format so I don't sound like I'm babbling because I can do that a lot.
Okay. Great. I look forward to that. And like, you know, I mentioned WWE Network's bringing some of the Nitros back too, as well as also I'm hearing they're also going to bring some footage of like WWC from Puerto Rico and USWA eventually as well from Memphis, which is really cool because that's like my pre Gorgeous George third day. So it'd be kind of good to relive not only the old Nitros, but you know what I mean.
That's what, you know, and I think you posted it today, Throwback Thursday. You posted a picture of yourself as Gorgeous George III.
Yeah, I sure did. A lot of history there.
Yeah, there's a lot of that stuff I don't think I've ever seen, and I know a certain person that's going to laugh at me for this. I don't think I've seen bits of it, but I don't think I've ever seen a complete episode of Smoky Mountain. And that's something that people talk about that's so revered that I'm dying to see some of that. I'll tell you what, and we'll end on this note, and you can have a comment after me. Through all of its streaming problems, this WWE Network is a blessing to the hardcore wrestling fans. Well, not only the hardcore wrestling fans, but specifically the hardcore wrestling fans who want to go back and relive some of that stuff. It is an obvious blessing that I hope is successful, and they keep it on for a long time.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And, I mean, I hope they keep on expanding their repertoire of old footage as well, and to kind of educate everybody on, you know, the old matches, the old feuds of the business, and should be very entertaining. And for all information on me, by the way, what I'm up to, like movies, wrestling, etc., you can go to my official website at www.thestro.com, thestro.com, and you can put Stro in the STRO in the Google search to find it. And that's all my social media and everything about me. So check it out when you get the time. And thank you guys for listening to WCW Retro. And thank you for your support of professional wrestling.
Well, you beat me to it. I was going to ask you what you were doing, and that's perfect. Thanks a lot. So follow the Stro at
thank
the
you.
Stro. Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, as a fan, and I don't care how this sounds, as a fan, I am very happy you took the time to answer any questions I had. And I was a fan. And I appreciate you taking your time out once a week to take a look back at the world that was World Championship Wrestling.
Oh, yeah, thank you for having me. And thank you guys so much for your support. It really means a lot. And, you know, keep on supporting professional wrestling all over the world. God bless
Absolutely.
You guys.
Absolutely. Amen. Amen, Stro. Mm-hmm. I will talk to you later, sir. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And like I said, next week we're going to start in order. I've made the executive decision, dang it. We're going to start with the NWA, the Crockett days. We're going to start with the 80s into the early days of the WCW Turner purchase. Anybody who wants to call in, join us, 855-VOC-RADIO. Give us a call, 855-VOC-RADIO. We will be back next week at 9:30 right here on the VOC Nation, vocnation.com. Follow me on Twitter at DanLaw83 and the Hell in the Cell, the HIAC, pardon me, the HIAC Talk Radio Network. Every Wednesday night, listen to the HIAC Talk Radio, your latest wrestling and MMA news. Follow us on Twitter at HIAC Talk Radio and HIACTalkRadio.com. I am Dan the Man Colachico. We will see you all next week. Thank you for listening and have a wonderful evening.
Genetic generation sequence. Malfunction detected. System overload.